I'm here in the noisy Pleasance Dome as they set up for the start of the Fringe. And David Byrne from Pitt Theatre, I can't believe it's over 3 years since we last spoke. Tell me what's been going on in Pitt Theatre since we spoke in 2009.
God, has it been 3 years? Since 2009, we did Stroke of Genius, which was part of the Arts Council showcase that year. Since then, I've personally opened a venue, which is New Diorama in London, where we're a resident company, and we've done two or three other shows. Most notably, The Dark Room, which was an adaptation of Brecht's Arturo Uy, which we did there, which was really wonderful. And we did Universal Machine earlier this year, which was a big show about Alan Turing and his whole life story, which, yeah, went down very well. And this is our first return to the Fringe since then with the show. We've been waiting for the right sort of show to bring out to the festival, and we think we found it with this one.
Not only writer-director, but also, I think, artistic director of the company too. What words and phrases kind of characterise the uniqueness of the company?
Well, I think it's a very collaborative company, so we all train together, so we're all very multi-skilled, so we can all weld to a professional level. We all are very good at sort of building set and costume, and it's a very collaborative process that sort of comes together. In terms of the work, to describe it, we're a total theatre company, so there's often quite a lot of music in our work, a lot of movement, there's a lot of comedy in it. They tend to be quite funny shows. I think this is the funniest show we've sort of done, and they're always based on sort of true stories that we find really fascinating and sort of unbelievable. So a combination of all of those elements sort of brought together tend to sort of characterise one of our shows.
David, tell me what's in your notebooks.
All of my various notebooks, lots of different things. I do a lot of writing of different things. So I write quite a bit for television, and I'm doing some radio stuff at the moment. So I make a lot of notes sort of as I go. I make a lot of notes on rehearsals that then aren't readable even at the end of the rehearsals, and I'm not quite sure what they've said. And general sort of building notes as well. When I meet young companies or see work, I tend to make, you know, not extensive notes, but just a few, just to sort of be able to refresh my memory when it comes around again, because I'm very bad at holding things in my head. But I'm quite addicted to notebooks. I know a lot of people use their phones. I know you use your iPad and an iPhone an awful lot. I've never been able to convert over, but my handwriting is so poor that maybe I need to make more of an effort this year. Maybe that's my next thing to focus on.
Now, an artistic director, you know, needs to have a good objective overview of their company, and a director, you know, also needs to have a certain perspective on a piece of writing, and a writer often feels very attached and, you know, the ownership of their work. How do these three people all get on in one head?
At various times, in a very mixed way. I mean, as a company, because it's very collaborative, that the text isn't treated with any sort of deference or reference in any sort of way. In fact, we tend to work without a text for as long as possible to get the sort of ideas flowing and the sort of shape of a piece coming together. I'm very objective about our own work. There have been pieces of work that I haven't been as keen on as others. And when sort of the critical response and the audience response sort of keys in with that, you feel, oh, we've still got at least a handle on where this sort of stuff's going. I'm fascinated to see what they think of the piece we've got up this year, because it's, I think, my favourite piece of work we've ever made, and I think it's really funny and I think it's really entertaining, but I know it won't be everybody's cup of tea. So I'm fascinated to see. I think we've stretched my critical palate to the edge with this one to see if that sort of works. But I think most directors are quite objective about their work, even if outwardly they're very sort of confident, and people tend to know what's good, what's bad, or sort of indifferent about the sort of stuff they're putting together. And working with a group of actors you've worked with for a long period of time means that you get, as a group, a tendency to be able to judge whether things are going to work with your audiences or not.
And so in terms of the creative tension that there often is between a writer and a director, you get that from your cast. It's not something you play out in your head.
No, they're very vocal about that sort of thing. We did a big cutting session yesterday. We need to cut about 5-10 minutes out of the show, and yeah, they all had a lot of ideas of how that would work. I mean, I when I write for theatre, I write for performance, so I'm writing it for them to perform, and often writing it based around rehearsals we've had. So it tends not to be too much of a tension. When you're writing for things you're not going to be directing, like when I'm writing a television script or something for radio, I'm much more detailed in my writing. With that sort of work, you have to finish it in your bedroom and, you know, before you send off your PDF. With theatre writing, everything always remains unfinished, even till a very late stage, even till the final few performances where you're still tweaking and making sort of notes. And it's great to work with a company that sort of understand that and sort of on board for making those changes and helping that sort of happen.
And in terms of the interview that I did with you back in 2009, if I played that back to you now, do you think it would evidence a difference between you then and now in terms of your own development? How have you changed?
I think we've got more confident about the sort of work we do. I think the viewpoints are relatively the same. I'm still working with Leah, who's is sort of half our company. We're still working with a lot of the same cast members. In fact, I think two or three of them are in this show we're bringing back this year. So I think it's developed and it's sort of grown. I think we've become more bold as theatre makers with the sort of stuff we can do. But I don't think the viewpoints have changed all that much.
Right. And in terms of, I guess my favourite phrase, the collusion of niceness, how do you ensure that you're not all too nice to each other?
By being, I think, you know, niceness and honesty. I mean, I'm a very honest person. You have to be when you're an artist director of a building. You have to say why you don't like work. I believe in the power of no. You know, I'm used to sort of critically talking about each other's work. We're very critical of each other in the sort of room. But it's all there when you're making a piece of theatre to make the piece better and ultimately for the greater good of everybody else. So there's no, I don't think there's any major problem with that. And knowing each other so well, I mean, some of us have known each other for over 10 years now, means that nothing's taken personally. I think if we were just being very, very polite to each other all the time, I think that would be awful. But I think you could be nice but still be brutally honest about what you think about something or why something's working or why something's not working. So I think we sort of get around it with sort of pure, brutal honesty, and that tends to go down very well.
And your writing's often about how mental states play out, isn't it?
Yes, I think it is. That's I hadn't pulled that together before, but thinking off the top of my head, I think it really is. Obviously, Stoker Jude is about a woman who's sort of determined to make sure her genes are sort of passed on and that people, her future generations, were able to find a sort of better path through their life than she was. Obviously, the Alan Turing piece earlier in the year dealt a lot with someone who had a lot of issues, and especially communicating with other people and the sort of world around him. And this show is about a serial fantasist and con man. So, and there are four simultaneous people playing him on stage. So I think that very much keys into his mental state. I think it's like spending an hour in his brain, really, hearing him fire off himself. So, yes, no, I'd agree with that.
So talking to David Byrne, the writer, do these ideas suddenly appear in your head? Or did, you know, like this one, which is a really interesting idea, very different, did it evolve?
You tend to hear stories. As I said, all the pit stuff we do is based on true stuff. So you get that sort of fish hook in your cheek and you think, oh, that sounds really interesting. And that's definitely an idea that we could sort of develop and that seems like ours. And then it takes normally a few years to gestate and turn into something that you could turn into a piece of theatre. And then it takes probably about another year to develop that idea with a company, you know, not full time, but here and there, developing it, bringing out the ideas and trying to get the theatrical language right to make it sort of work. Also, this show is supposed to be a real comedy. I mean, it's not a theatre comedy, it's a proper comedy with lots of jokes in it, and it takes a while to get a piece of material like that right and sort of stripped down. So an idea normally takes 2 or 3 years from sort of thinking, oh, that's interesting, to putting it on stage.
And in terms of playing it in London and then playing in Edinburgh, what made you decide after 3 years this one needs to come here?
Actually, well, we haven't played it fully in London yet. So we're opening on Wednesday and that's the first time people are going to see the full show. We did a 15-minute version of it at the Miniaturists, which is run across different venues in London. I think it's at the Arcola at the moment. And they asked us to do something for 15 minutes. And this has been an idea that had been floating around. So I wrote a 15-minute piece, and it went down a real storm. And that's where we met Flavia Fraser-Cannon, who's producing this. That's where Greenwich Theatre, who are co-producing this as well, came on board and said, oh, we should definitely take this in a longer version to Edinburgh. And then we did another 15- to 20-minute version at the Pleasance Theatre as part of the Enfant Terrible Prize this year, which we eventually won. So I just thought it seemed a lot of fun. It seemed a festival-y show. It's quite a bold show. And I think in Edinburgh, because you'll find this as a critic, last year I saw 40-something shows, which actually is relatively average on the hard-going fringe venue, and so little stands out. You need a really bold piece with something really strong about it, something very immediately identifiable about it, to really stick in people's minds. And I thought no one else is going to be doing a show quite like this. It's very strong. It's very full on. I think this is definitely an Edinburgh show to take up and really make a mark with.
And final question then, dear old the real Kubrick is kind of sitting in the back row watching this piece. What do you think he'd come up to you and say afterwards?
I think he'd really enjoy it. We use an awful lot of references and music from his films. We've been working with Anthony Frewin, who's Stanley Kubrick's longtime assistant, who's coming up. He actually did a film about the same con man, which we're doing a showing of at the Filmhouse cinema during the run. He's coming up and I'm interviewing him for a Q&A. Stanley Kubrick was very flippant about this guy who was pretending to be him. I think his wife was more affected by it. He once threatened that he would dress up as Alan Conway, the gentleman who's pretending to be him, and pretend to be Alan Conway and sort of go out and sort of do stuff. So I think he would find it very fun. It's a very inventive show. There's very little set. There's a screen and an old board, which we turn into practically everything. And Stanley himself was incredibly inventive, and I think he'd like that. And learning more from Anthony Frewin, Stanley Kubrick's assistant, about the way that Stanley worked, he had a very small team who worked together over decades making these films. So there are three or four of them that made all of these incredible sort of masterpieces. And in a way, you know, not in terms of making the masterpieces, but in terms of the way we're working, you know, Pitt work in a very similar way. We're a group of people who've really dedicated and have a real language together. And I think he'd really, really appreciate that.
Brimming as ever, David Byrne, thank you very much.